out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 4th of April 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and we're broadcasting live today at radioarian.com because we have with us Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rushjournal.org. Matt, how are you doing today?
I don't know if you noticed on my show yesterday, my youngest cat Stanley got into a fight with his sister just as I started.
Yeah,
and, I removed it.
It's gone, so the listeners didn't hear it because I managed to remove it. Okay. Yeah, I removed it.
Got rid of it. Okay, well, its show went a little long, so I guess that makes sense. Well, that was just, you know, they're anarchists, politically speaking, and sometimes I think they do it just to, you know, cut me off and interrupt the show. I'm not saying that they're Antifa or anything. They're not, but they're, you know, they're independent, so to speak. So I do think they do it on purpose.
Well, it's quite easy enough for me to spot, actually. Lucky enough, I spotted it, and I was able to remove it. So,
I mean, it was pretty loud.
I doubt whether the listeners would have even picked up on it, thankfully. But I think we will certainly be picking up on what we're going to be talking about today, the uptick in prices of oil. I mean, the petrol prices have gone up around here. I've just been told that my electricity bill is going to increase by hundreds of pounds just for the year. And from what you're telling me about, Matt, this is all to do with sanctions on Iran, this subject that we've been talking about. Do you want to just give a rundown on why that is before we get into some of these quotes?
Yeah, you know, it seems like a fairly obscure topic, but it has to be discussed because oil used to be the American ace in the hole. I mean, it was central to American dominance in the world order. Because even some of the OPEC countries in the Middle East are still American-run, Saudi Arabia being the dominant one. But now with sanctions on three major oil-producing countries, Iran, Russia, and Venezuela, and apparently an increase in demand in China and demand in the U.S., although there's no economic recovery, which can only mean it's just all credit, which is frightening, prices are going through the roof. And the U.S. can't control it, which is a huge deal in and of itself. And on top of all that, the Europeans won't deal with it. There's all these sanctions, there are all exceptions in the Iran sanctions, exceptions all over the place, with the exception of Venezuela. There's no exceptions there. As you know, Russia and China have brought troops into Venezuela to protect their investments there. And so while this is obscure to some people, it's extremely important. The mere fact that it's obscure to Americans doesn't mean that it is actually obscure. But because it's a fairly complex topic and will hit everyone, as you just said, in the wallet very soon, we have to discuss it. No doubt about it.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? I mean, we are having to pay for these sanctions that have been put on Iran and on Venezuela. The first article that we've got here is Iranian oil minister holds energy talks in Moscow. Iran, alongside Libya and Venezuela, was exempted from the production cuts at the OPEC/non-OPEC meeting in December due to the US sanctions on its oil industry. The visit of the Iranian oil minister in Moscow comes a month before the United States is due to decide whether to extend all or some or none of the waivers it had granted to key Iranian oil customers when it reimposed the sanctions in early November. The US waivers for 8 key Iranian oil customers, including China, India, Japan, and South Korea, and they all expire in early May. While the US administration says that it continues to pursue zero Iranian oil exports, analysts expect Washington to extend waivers to at least a few of the currently exempted buyers with reduced volumes allowed under the new waivers, as the administration wouldn't want to push oil prices too high. Well, this seems to me as if they're saying, you know, well, you can buy from them, but you can't buy from them. And, you know, and I got this from a comment that was on one of the articles, and it said, under what international law is America allowed to say who can sell to who and who can buy from who? I mean, where does that come into it?
Well, international law, I've never taken it seriously. International law is imposed by the most powerful countries in the world for their own interests. And because of that, they could override it at any time. You know, international law is just a political weapon that the U.S. can use against its opponents, but its opponents can't use it against the U.S. Although that's exactly the point, because it's changing. There is no new world order without the U.S. The U.S. is the head of the Hydra here, the head of the snake, so to speak. So if it's saying that, yeah, we're going to have sanctions on Iran, but we'll still permit China, India, Japan, and South Korea to buy from there, it's an admission of weakness. It's an admission of the fact that the U.S. can enforce it. China, India, Japan, these are huge economies. Japan and South Korea are supposed to be the two big U.S. allies in the Pacific. Now they're buying from Iran. And if they're getting a good deal from Iran, which they obviously are, they wouldn't be buying there. They're not going to listen to the U.S. if the U.S. says, you know, when the waivers end in May, they're going to say, no, we're not going to deliberately increase our cost of living by buying somewhere else. And so it shows you the U.S. can't throw its weight around anymore. It's a multipolar world, and this is a gigantic thing. Having waivers on Iran means the sanctions really don't mean anything. That's the point here.
So really, America is just bullying these smaller countries and saying, well, you can't buy oil from Iran, but China and India, Japan, South Korea, they're all fine to buy their oil from Iran. And this is obviously going to annoy the smaller countries. And you said that the European Union isn't playing along with this. Now, I can see the European Union looking and saying, well, hang on a minute. China can buy cheap oil. India can buy cheap oil. Why can't we buy cheap oil? Is there any oil deals going on between Iran and any of the countries in the European Union? Do you know?
Well, let's wait. Later in the program, we'll talk about that. These nations, especially given difficult economic times, are going to go where the prices are the best, and they don't give a damn about politics in this case. And to the extent that the U.S. continues to show weakness, which it does, it has no choice but to show weakness because it's weaker than it was before. That's going to give more and more incentive. And we'll talk about the NOPEC legislation here in a minute, too. And the U.S. is trying to put this into law. And the fact that this is an OPEC, non-OPEC meeting, and Russia, of course, is a leader of the non-OPEC countries, along with Bahrain and a few others, Burma, a few others in Africa. This is, you know, yeah, they're not going to listen to this. And it doesn't matter whether or not sanctions are put on Iran in May, these countries again in May. It doesn't make any difference because they're going to continue to buy from Iran, or they're just simply going to go where it's cheaper. And a lot of the pipeline systems in Iran are coming from Russia anyway. This is a big part of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, not to mention the entire struggle against the empire. Now, we talked one time about Western China, the war against Islam there. The U.S. is building Islamic movements in northwestern China, partially because that's where the gas and oil pipelines are going through from the Caspian Sea, owned by both Russia and China. So, you know, the mere fact that it's obscure to people doesn't keep it from being some of the most strategic and most significant political issues in the world today. You're not going to hear about this in American political debate or a presidential debate or anything. That doesn't mean anything. It's still immensely important, because without the oil cudgel, the U.S. is increasingly weak and may be increasingly irrelevant globally.
Well, this is certainly evidence of that. Well, according to the next article that we've got here, a perfect storm of tight supply and global demand has driven oil prices higher. Demand in China is growing at a stronger rate than expected, while other emerging markets are set to shake off a rough 2018 that saw a strong dollar, rising interest rates, and high oil prices. Meanwhile, other analysts are also similarly bullish. As risky assets focused on macro concerns, oil markets have largely overlooked supply-side tightness in IQ19 that has helped global oil markets to rebalance since the end of 2018, JP Morgan Chase said in a report. With a potential for a US-China trade talk resolution emerging, oil prices should finally break out of the narrow trading range and should be supported in the very near term due to policy-driven supply-side tightness. The US is also weighing the expiration of sanctions waivers on Iran, and the tight oil market could force Trump to extend some of them. The Department of Energy could also release oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, while the US Congress is working on NOPEC legislation, which could threaten OPEC coordination. Moreover, it is unclear how OPEC might respond to any of those actions. For instance, Saudi Arabia could ramp up supply to crash prices in response to NOPEC being signed into law. Or they could continue to over-comply with production cuts after making the mistake of abandoning them too early last year. The permutations are endless, so take each price forecast with a grain of salt. So what's this NOPEC legislation that they're talking about here, that they're talking about signing into law? What is that, and how is that going to affect things?
Well, every Congress tries to put this legislation into action, but this is the only Congress that's actually is doing something about it. What it does, and this is a bipartisan movement, by the way, so you know big oil is behind it. It puts sanctions, because that's all the only weapon the U.S. has, on any country that creates an oil cartel. If they are operating together, colluding together to fix prices, which of course is what OPEC is, they'll lose their sovereign immunity. And they'll lose their most favored nation trade status. They may even see tariffs on their products. Whatever the U.S. can do to punish them. But the fact is, now you see this, the first sentence here, demand in China growing at a stronger rate. Well, that all that means is that because there's a trade war going on at the moment, China's oil demand is going up. That generally means that China doesn't need the American market anymore. China is now the biggest oil consumer, and they're the only ones that matter. They never say what they mean by balancing the market. I think by balance, they just mean something that acts in the U.S. interest. I also can't see Saudi Arabia, crashing prices. I don't see how that's in anybody's interest. So the NOPEC thing is just a lot of bluster. Big oil is behind it. Both Republicans and Democrats are going to go almost uncontested in Congress for the very first time. It usually doesn't go anywhere. And so, and JP Morgan Chase is trying to rationalize how is it possible that the Chinese economy is growing even with this trade war going on? And the answer is it just doesn't need the U.S. anymore. The U.S. market is so indebted. You have this $18 trillion in private sector debt alone, let alone about the same in public sector debt. There's not much room to maneuver here. And yet, to some extent, demand in the U.S. is growing slowly, which could only be from credit. So I can't believe there's any more credit to be given that may be only in elite areas. But yeah, this is incredible. But NOPEC is utter nonsense. The U.S. is in no position to put any more sanctions on anybody. And you know, you're going to get into a big tariff fight. So this is a lot of bluster here. And all it's going to mean is that prices are going to continue to go up and especially in the U.S. because Venezuela was a huge supplier to the Americans. And so, what you mentioned, the strategic oil reserve. Well, that's about enough oil for a month, maybe a month and a half. You know, the U.S. has every possibility of being the highest producer of oil and natural gas in the world. But because of the New World Order, a lot of those wells are capped. Plus the fact that you have the environmentalist movement who doesn't want any oil being produced here anyway. So that may change though. That may change in places like North Dakota and Alaska and Texas and other places. These, you know, Louisiana, these places haven't really been producing oil in a long time. And that's changing now. So, you know, this is what happens when you have a multipolar world. Oil is not a weapon anymore. NOPEC is just, you know, the last attempt. As far as I know, it's going to pass and it will be signed. And for all the crap about, you know, Trump being a stooge of Putin, he hasn't done a single thing in Russia's interest. His sanction regime is far harsher than anything that Obama or even the Bushes ever had, or the Clintons ever had. So, you know, rebalancing the market, they just want prices down. And the imbalance comes from American sanctions, which are increasingly irrational, which are only barely being applied, and are going to fail even with this NOPEC legislation, because NOPEC is meant to destroy OPEC. Now, why this wasn't done in the late 70s, when OPEC, you know, crashed the American economy, I don't know why it's only now that they're doing this. Unless, of course, it's bluster, a way to compensate for American impotence. And I think it's just symbolic legislation. It sounds good, but it can't. They're not going to do anything about it. They're not putting sanctions on these countries. They're certainly not doing it. You know, Saudi Arabia decides that it's going to go along with OPEC, and of course, it's one of its leaders. Then the NOPEC legislation is going to be nothing, because the U.S. needs Saudi Arabia in the Middle East, especially if it's going to lose Turkey. If it loses Turkey, then the U.S. is going to be heavily dependent on Saudi Arabia, which means that Saudi Arabia can do whatever it pleases, despite the fact that the major state oil company in Saudi Arabia, while owned by Saudis, as I mentioned before, every single member of the board is a Saudi citizen who's purely American, who's lived in America, who's going to American universities. I've listed them all at one point, all from elite American universities. These are Americans for all intents and purposes. So this is a complicated thing, but the two takeaways are, number one, American weakness and the crash of the New World Order, and number two, increasingly high oil prices. These sanctions, not only do they not work, but the Americans have to pay for it, and the Englishmen have to pay for it. And this is why the Europeans are getting upset.
So just clear something up for me here. So this legislation, it's to penalize NOPEC for the benefit of OPEC, or is it to penalize OPEC itself?
Yeah, it's a destroy OPEC.
So it's to destroy OPEC. It's to get rid of the original oil cartel, the oil producing, petroleum producing countries. That's what OPEC is, isn't it? So it's to destroy that cartel. So what is NOPEC then? What's the other one that has an N in front of it? Because I thought you were saying Russia leads NOPEC. Is that another consortium of other oil producing countries?
No. NOPEC is just, that's the name of the legislation. OPEC Plus is generally the OPEC countries plus Russia and maybe Norway. Because, you know, and then I don't even know if Scotland, how much oil Scotland's pumping these days from the ocean. So what it means ultimately, so that NOPEC is just the name of the law, and it's to, you know, it's a funny name to crush it. So it's essentially, it's taking American antitrust legislation and making it international. Technically, even the WTO, the old GATT agreement, all this bans any kind of cartel formation. So OPEC's been in flaunting that for a long time. What can you do? This isn't any old type of cartelization. This is oil. Now, there was an attempt. I mean, every other attempt to create a cartel has failed. Jamaica tried to do one in bauxite, the main ingredient in aluminum, because Jamaica is one of the world's largest producers. This is back in the 70s. And the only thing, the U.S. just crashed the market by dumping all of its bauxite in the market, destroying the cartel. Only a few countries make bauxite, and aluminum is obviously very important. But the U.S. can't do that because this strategic oil reserve is so small. Plus the fact, getting all these other wells moving, allowing it to happen, getting through the environmentalist movement and everything else is going to take years. So the U.S. can't do what it used to do to Jamaica and other bauxite producing countries like Angola. OPEC and oil is the exception. So the increasing connection between the state and American oil companies, and the fact that they're essentially one entity now, automatically means collusion, means there is no market. And that's the only reason why NOPEC could exist now. And OPEC is nothing. It will be passed. And I just can't imagine these guys losing their sovereign immunity in DC, you know, and having tariff walls put on their production. So, you know, ultimately what it comes down to is American weakness and the tight connection between state and oil firms, where they're essentially indistinguishable. And that's really the big takeaway here.
So it'll be completely toothless if they do put it into law. Well, the Iranians don't seem to be very happy about this. They've been advising the Americans to talk less. Washington's comments on oil prices are to blame for the problems in the oil market, the chief Iranian energy official has said, warning that the situation could become even worse if the US fails to hold its tongue. Americans talk a lot, and I advise them to talk less. They have caused tensions in the oil market for over a year now, and they are responsible for it. And if this trend continues, the market will be more tense, Iranian Minister of Petroleum Bijan Zanganeh said late Saturday, as cited by the ministry-affiliated Petro Energy Information Network, Shana. Iran is one of the biggest producers in the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC, which has frequently met with fierce criticism from US President Donald Trump. The cartel and its allied major oil producers, including Russia, tried to stabilize the oil market by cutting their output after crude prices fell. However, the US leader accused the organization of price manipulation while the US was boosting its own production and exports. Tehran has been at loggerheads with Washington since President Trump targeted the landmark 2015 Iran nuclear deal and subsequently withdrew from it. The sanctions on Iran, reintroduced by the Trump administration after the pullout, have taken a toll on the Iranian energy sector with the aim of cutting imports of Iranian crude to zero. When they're not going to be able to get it to zero if they've got all these waivers going. And it does seem as if this has been done to benefit America so they can bump up their oil exports. Is that what it's saying here, Matt?
Well, like I say, it's going to take years for that to happen. These wells in the U.S. have been capped for so long. But again, the U.S. dominance in the world is partly through oil, through the fact that it has tremendous connections overseas and could help smooth transaction from one country to another. But that's failing. Of course, the Iranians are right. This is the U.S.'s fault. And it shut down Venezuela entirely. I don't think it has any effect on Iran. Because the U.S. never got Iranian oil anyway. We'll see a bit later that the EU is not going to go along with this. So the only thing that has to happen is Russia and Iran, who are close allies anyway, goes to the U.S. and says, okay, you don't like the high prices, you don't like the failure of the sanctions, great, take sanctions off of us and we'll bring prices down. In fact, it will bring prices down automatically. And that means that this, you know, Russo-Iranian alliance is already more powerful than the U.S. And all it has to do is to take the sanctions off and we'll bring prices down, no problem. And we'll see if it happens. But that's really what this comes down to, is that these countries can now dictate to the U.S. rather than the other way around. And when you have – and then, of course, you know, and they may even say you don't like high oil prices? Well, you know, give Venezuela back its Citgo money. Could see $7 billion in Citgo assets already. So these are the countries who now have tremendous influence in society. And, of course, all these countries are now invested in Venezuela, and they're going to be demanding the lift of sanctions on that. And if that happens, it's going to be just humiliation for the U.S., but it's either that or increasingly high gas prices, high energy prices, not just in England and the U.S., but throughout the world. So the U.S. has this choice to make, either suffer high prices or, you know, be humiliated by having to lift sanctions because Russia and the Iranians said so.
Well, Mike Pompeo doesn't seem to have got the memo that America has lost its influence, because he's seeking to recruit top world oil executives to promote U.S. foreign policy. Pompeo said that American shale oil and natural gas should become instruments to strengthen the US's hand in foreign policy. As an example of such an intertwined approach, the top US diplomat referred to the crisis in Venezuela, which has the largest proven oil reserves in the world. The Latin American country has seen its economy crumbling under Washington's stifling economic sanctions for years, since January when Washington recognized opposition leader Juan Guaido as Venezuela's interim president. The U.S. has accelerated its onslaught on the Caracas oil industry, imposing sanctions on its state oil company PDVSA and seizing $7 billion in its U.S. assets. One of the hindrances to U.S. energy dominance in Europe is Russia, with the $11 billion Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which is set to deliver gas to European consumers below the Baltic Sea and is a thorn in Washington's side. While the Trump administration's attempts to persuade Berlin to ditch the project in favor of more expensive American liquefied natural gas have so far fallen flat, it has not given up on its efforts to derail the Russian pipeline. We don't want our European allies hooked on Russian gas through the Nord Stream 2 project any more than we ourselves want to be dependent on Venezuelan oil supplies, Pompeo said, just a day after US Energy Secretary Rick Perry confirmed that the US is mulling sanctions on the project. Pompeo further alleged that Russia's involvement in the Ukraine conflict is a covert attempt to gain access to Ukrainian natural resources, including oil and gas reserves. Well, there's a lot there, isn't there? European sanctions and admitting that the revolution in the Ukraine was all about America getting hold of resources here, and Mike Pompeo thinking that they can force America's foreign policy on the rest of the world with these sanctions is basically what he's saying, isn't it? And trying to get other people to go along with it. Is he trying to get these other executives to join him?
Yeah, well, this is one of the key takeaways here, that on the one hand, they're going to punish any kind of collusion among countries. On the other hand, they're attempting to create this cartel of their own, led by the U.S., and major oil executive doesn't say who it is, really, to create their own version of OPEC, which is what I mean. These laws and rules are all about who the strongest country is. But if this isn't projection, sort of this U.S. government neurosis, claiming, you know, projects that couldn't possibly work, to the point where, you know, putting more sanctions. I mean, how often do we use the word sanctions here? It's going to be that every country on the planet is going to be under U.S. sanctions, which means no one's going to be. I struggle to see the U.S. really becoming the number one supplier like it used to be. There's such a huge, I mean, the environmentalist movement is so big in this country, it would revitalize it entirely, unless, of course, they can control it. Because the U.S. Environmentalist movement has big oil behind it. If you go to the, if you check out their oil companies' corporate philanthropy, it goes to some of these groups. So they may be able to cash in a few favors. But this is just to create their own OPEC. It's not going to work. The Europeans aren't. I mean, Pompeo hasn't gotten the memo. He hasn't gotten any memo. The U.S. can't do this. The U.S. can't constantly throw sanctions around. And the Nord Stream, I mean, Europeans have wanted this for years. Germany and Austria, Finland, Scandinavia have such heavy, even France has such heavy investments in Russia. They're not going to be told what to do. You don't tell these billionaires, you know, don't make profits in Russia anymore. The U.S. simply doesn't have the strength. And it's going to, not only that, it may even make, the destruction of the European Union more and more important or more necessary, because the European Union is Germany. If the Germans say we're not going to be a part of this anymore, the EU may itself even try to put sanctions on Germany, which is impossible. It could tear the whole alliance apart, and Russia doesn't even have to lift a finger. And this last section, the Russian intervention, which, you know, doesn't exist. You know, this is a purely local matter, but as far as the Eastern revolution is concerned, it's just projection. This is exactly what the U.S. has tried to do. Two oil companies prior to this revolution in 2014 bought up both extreme sides of Ukraine with police powers and everything else for the sake of fracking, having full water rights and everything. I know they've been thrown out, but this is just projection. This is what the U.S. does. It just can't. This is just pure delusion on the American part.
Well, projection is a word that which keeps turning up in these podcasts when we're discussing these sort of subjects. And Iran is, this next article says, Iran in economic psychological war with US and its allies. The Trump administration made increasing pressure on Iran, a priority of its foreign policy. Washington pulled out of the 2015 nuclear deal with Tehran, despite the objections of other signatories, and has been twisting the arms of other nations to force them to stop doing business with Iran. Rouhani said the US reimposing economic sanctions on Iran was meant to goad Tehran into pulling out of the nuclear deal, which has not happened. This resulted in the US being isolated at the UN Security Council when President Donald Trump personally appealed for sanctions to be slapped on Iran last year. The White House is currently filled with Iran hawks, such as Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and National Security Advisor John Bolton. Washington is trying to forge a regional anti-Iranian alliance, which would include Israel and the Gulf monarchies led by Saudi Arabia. Last month, they met in Poland for a high-profile meeting, which was largely snubbed by the European heavyweights. Rouhani said the outcome of the meeting, which was a far cry from the world rallying behind Washington to fight against Tehran, was another blow to the US policy towards Iran. The Iranian president acknowledged that the US has managed to create problems in Iran with its sanctions and other actions, and pledged that his government will work tirelessly to solve or mitigate them, serving the interests of the Iranian people. And it's all backfiring, isn't it, if these prices keep going up for everyone? It's nice to hear that he's going to be working to look after the Iranian people there, Matt.
Well, and in the next one, we're not going to have a chance to get to it. But you have the vice president of the U.S. going to Europe and yelling at the Germans, saying that you're not only not enforcing sanctions, but you're doing the opposite. You're investing even more in Russia. And now you have Angela Merkel, who out of nowhere says, we're going to maintain our national sovereignty when it comes to energy, which, you know, who knew she would say something like this, which shows you how pissed these countries are getting at the U.S. Well, Merkel set all of a sudden becomes a nationalist, saying, no, we're going to maintain our position in Russia. We're going to have multiple suppliers to keep prices down. We're not going to listen to the U.S. And so Pence is a neurotic behavior. Pence is actually raising his voice at a meeting, the so-called Munich Security Conference, saying that we can't do anything here if the Europeans aren't going to listen to us. And then Merkel gets up even before his comment and says, we're not going to listen to you. We're going to maintain our national sovereignty. We're going to maintain our support for the Russian pipeline. We're going to keep prices low. We're not going to be throwing sanctions around like you guys. You have no influence here. And the U.S. pulled out of other security treaties with the EU because they're generally pro-Iranian. And they're getting, you know, so this is just, you know, when he's raising his voice over there, this is not exactly a position of strength. And it's the same thing, you know, in the Iranian case. You know, no one's listening. The U.S. is completely isolated. And the U.S. power is going to crash. The dollar is going to crash. And if sanctions collapse, as they probably will, then that will be a tremendous relief for the economies of especially Europe and America. If the U.S. gets its way, it's going to be another story. But the real key issue is if the U.S. is going to back down on Venezuelan sanctions. And if the U.S. and if Iran and the Russians tell them to do it, they may. Military action is out of the question with troops there now, Chinese and Russian troops there. And but you have Angela Merkel talking like this. This is huge. This is a slap in the American face, which is exactly a slap in the face of the New World Order. Multiculturalism, globalism is going down the tubes here.
Well, it certainly is from the look of this. I mean, it says in his fiery tirade, the vice president also called on the EU to join Washington in openly backing Venezuelan opposition leader Juan Guaido. So the EU is not backing Venezuela either. Then he lashes out at the construction of Nord Stream 2, and then he commends those nations that had taken a stand against the project and urges others to do the same. And then Merkel replies that it is right and important for Europe to maintain sovereignty over its energy policy and to have a variety of gas suppliers. Defending the construction of the pipeline with Russia, she said that pushing Moscow out of the European gas market would be a wrong strategic signal. That is the complete opposite of what Pompeo has been demanding that she do. I mean, that's, yeah, that's all very interesting stuff here today, Matt. Thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you with Grandpa Lampshade. God bless and hail victory.